Hey everyone, welcome back to Bros and Shows. I am your host Josiah, aka Mahler67, and with me, as always, you know I got my buddy, I got my pal, I got my brother Austin. Austin, how you doing today?
Not too bad. How about everyone else that's listening out there on Twitch, and you? How was your day?
Hey,
your
man.
Week so far?
Hey man, it's been fine. Oh wait, what am I doing? Why did I change that? Oops. Oh well. It didn't affect the pitch quality at all. Perfect. I started messing with the one trailer for game that I already set up the setting for it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hold up, wait a minute. That kind of messes with the scene. You know, there it goes. Boom. Back mm-hmm. to normal. I've been having a pretty okay week. Didn't feel great yesterday. Because I woke up and just, I think I had a hard time going to sleep because I was just thinking about Baldur's Gate and slash like watching stuff on my phone about it and everything. Next thing I know, it was around like 1 a.m. And by the time I went to bed and got up, I just was like, I was drained to the point where I almost felt sick. And I called off and then just slept till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, woke up and then played games and I felt great. Other than that, you know, my week's been pretty good. Just been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate. Just a lot of Baldur's Gate. Which is pretty good. Pretty good. Like it a lot. I highly recommend it if you like D&D or turn-based games. It hits that perfect itch. Just a little bit of learning curve when it comes to, like, mechanics if you're used to basic turn-based games versus what Baldur's Gate is a little more like D&D than anything else.
Yeah.
But Austin, how about you? How's your week been?
It's been pretty good. I finally, I went and watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
for
the weekend, and I enjoyed it. It was a different take on like the whole story. Actually, it was a little different than what you know you're used to, but I really enjoyed it. And like with you know. Animation how it is today, especially you know Enter the Spider-Verse has like changed how certain animation should be in like certain movies. So this style was like different, though it wasn't like Enter the Spider-Verse. It kind of gives off that vibe a little bit, but it feels like somewhat like a teenage person drew this cartoon.
It feels
a little different. It's weird, but I enjoyed it. I took my wife's little cousin to go see it because she loves Ninja Turtles, and she actually watched it the night before and she was like, yeah, I'll go watch it again with you. I was like, all right, cool. So we went, and I was sitting there and I was like, okay, so I know Paul Rudd's in it, John Cena, I'm trying to think who else. Seth Rogen,
Jackie Chan is Splinter,
and then I'm trying to think the other one. It was John Cena, and then I'm trying to think who the other person played Bebop. Oh no, that was Seth Rogen played Bebop. But what's really weird is the bat character that actually is the flying bat. I think it's called Gizmo or Gadjo or whatever, and when this person spoke I knew who it was instantly. It's the girl that plays Nausea from What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh really?
She's that character.
Second she started talking you're just like, Nausea, yeah. What are you doing?
But the one that got me was there's like this other character that started speaking. It was one of the villains. And Ice Cube was Superfly. This character started speaking. And I was like, man, that guy sounds really familiar. How do I know that voice? So I'm sitting there and he speaks again. And I was like, oh, I know who it is now. And it's Post Malone. Post Malone, is like infinite, like very famous in the nerd community now because he bought the One Ring and.
I heard about that.
Yeah, he bought it. He did it this week. Yeah, and I actually followed the guy on TikTok that pulled it. Like, when he pulled it, he got a lawyer and everything, and he was like, he got with this company that was helping him sell it. And they were like, who would you like to sell it to? And he's like, well, really, in reality, it'd be Post. Like, I would love to meet him and sell it to him. And he's like, he was playing in my hometown like a week later, and I got a call, and I was like, hey, he wants to buy it off of you. And he's like, are you, is this a joke? And he's like, no, he wants to own it. And I'm going to be real about it. It's a safe bet because they said that they're never going to print it again. the value's just going to keep going up on that card as long as it just sits there. So if Poe Silver's like, I'm bankrupt, I'm going to sell the one, you know, and just make it out like a bat. You know, and
maybe. Because at that point, yeah, if there's another person who's rich like him to buy it.
Yeah,
that's always the question.
Magic came out like this week on their Twitter and revealed a whole bunch of new universes beyond. Like, we're getting Final Fantasy cards now. Final Fantasy cards, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be Commander decks. And then, because we're getting the Doctor Who Commander set, I think, next month.
Man.
They're only Commander decks, but they do have characters. But they revealed that they're doing a Final Fantasy one. Jurassic Park is going to come to Secret Lair now. It's just, they're doing these beyond universes because they did like Dungeons and Dragons, Transformers, and they did Street Fighter. The Walking Dead is like their biggest seller they've ever had, supposedly. So it's pretty interesting, like some of the stuff that they're bringing back and like what universes they're picking to bring in. And everyone's been making just a bunch of memes on the internet. It's like Universe Beyond, Pokemon, and Yu-Gi-Oh. I'm just like, okay, this is funny because that will never happen, but I like those things. And then when Secret Lair first dropped, there was a whole bunch of memes about like extended universe, and someone put South Park, and I was like, I will totally buy that set if it ever became something. You know, which is funny because South Park has made fun of Magic in an episode before, so it's pretty interesting, like some of the stuff that's, yes, may I help you? Love you. The old wife just checking in. So yeah, it's pretty interesting to see like what they're doing with that. But I saw that Post Malone did buy the card. I'm pretty ecstatic that he bought the card because he is a fan of Magic, and I'm okay with him. But what's great is like he played some creature in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, and I really enjoyed it. I actually thoroughly enjoyed the movie a lot more than what I thought I would. But it's totally worth a watch. I think it's better than the last TMNT movie we had, which was like, I think it was like 2007 when we had like a TMNT animated movie.
We had the one from Michael Bay or whatnot.
Well, no, animated movie.
Now, okay.
Yeah, the live action ones are just trash. I'm going to say that. But yeah, overall, it's been pretty cool. You know, I've been kind of, you know, reading a lot, doing some things, you know, pretty much I've been super busy most of this week, you know, so I'm pretty ecstatic. So, but what was really cool was we actually, the show that we're reviewing, which is Good Omens Season 2, that actually came out, and it was at a time where, like, I was going through a lot of stuff at the time, and I needed something to help me. And I actually hurt my back like a week. I said it on the podcast last week that I hurt my back, and I was really not able to like move. One Sunday, I couldn't move at all. Like, I just had to lay in bed, and I slept most of the day because I wanted to get, you know, my back rested. And I binged watched the show. Like, I just binged it. And then I rewatched it this week too because I you know, I was like, yeah, you know, refresher for podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So we're talking about Good Omens Season 2. What did you think of Season 2, Josiah?
I'll tell you what, man. Season 2, I liked it a lot. It was pretty well done. The acting was fantastic, as always.
Yeah. It's David Tennant, everyone.
Yeah. I it's not even just David Tennant. I forget the other dude's name.
Michael Sheen, is it Shin or
Shin? Michael Sheen.
Or is it Michael Sheen?
I don't know. That's the first name that came to my head.
I thought his last name was like
Michael
Sheen.
Michael Sheen. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Michael Sheen. Yeah.
And even John Hammond did great. He was a big part of this season. I love John Hammond. So he's the guy that plays Gabriel. Yeah. You know, and we got to see some other people. But the only thing that was missing from the season, which a lot of people I think forgot, but I started thinking about it and I was like, there's something that totally isn't part of the season that was a big thing in season one.
Nick Offerman. Maybe... Yeah. What?
No, it was the whole storyline about the witch.
Oh, no, and... I 100% knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought they were going to bring it up a little bit.
So here's the thing, right? Whenever we were whenever we started watching this at the beginning of last week, or at the middle of last week, I watched a TikTok where the person started talking about, like, Good Omens Season 2. And the person didn't start off the TikTok by saying, hey, spoilers. They just started talking about Season 2. And I realized quickly, I'm like, oh, this is spoiler-based. And I checked the comments, and the first comment was, I'm so sorry, I forgot to say spoiler. It's spoiler, please no. And the person began with saying how, like, you know, the book itself ends at the end of the first season.
Yes.
They change how it happens in the books and everything. Like, the book itself is its own thing. Mm-hmm. But the show has its own way of doing it. And when Neil Gaiman was asked, like, what do you intend to, like, make the show about with Season 2 on? And Neil Gaiman says, like, I have a story I want to tell. And it's the story of the two. And so I knew that going into it. And I'm like, I was catching some hints last season to, like, obvious, like, I felt it was pretty, like, spot on. Like, it's like, you could tell there's a little more between the two. This season was kind of built on that whole thought process, that relationship, the idea of the two of them together and just how they affect the world around them.
Yeah.
Whenever I knew that going in, my brain's like, they shouldn't bring in the witch and the other dude.
Mm-hmm.
Because all they care about is the apocalypse. Yeah. If this new season's about them stopping an apocalypse, then they'll show up. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was more of like a mystery kind of season where they're trying to figure out what the heck happened to Gabriel.
Yeah.
And what can they do to either return his memories or stop whatever is happening or what have you. And so whenever I noticed that, I was like, we're not going to see Jack from them at all. And sure enough, nope, nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
I will say this. I really thoroughly loved this season. It confused me some parts because of, like, certain things that did happen. I was like, wait, what is this? What does this mean? And, like, I kind of, like, you know, what's great about a show like this is they kind of, like, summarize some things sometimes. Mm-hmm. Where, like, they'll bring it back and be like, oh, okay, that makes sense now because I understand it because they brought it back up a little bit later. Because I was, like, confused. There was a part where, like, you know, when they find Gabriel's, when they find the matchbox in heaven, I was like, wait, they're not going to talk about this anymore? And then it comes back later. It's like, oh, yeah, it's his memories. Mm-hmm. Where he put his memory in the matchbox. And then I liked the interesting take that Neil Gaiman does with his characters. And he also is a huge fan of mythology and, like, critical thinking and stuff. I love that. I didn't tell you this, but I actually read the book. It was on Audible, and I had a credit. And I was like, you know what, I'll just read it. So I read it, actually, I think the last season, actually, right after it ended. I was like, I'm going to read this and compare it to, like, what's different from that. But then you're correct. It ends right at the end of season one. So after I read it, I was like, how are they going to do this? Is this going to be successful? And the thing is, like, I love Neil Gaiman. I think Terry Pratchett did a great job. And I'm starting to read some of his books because my buddy Brandon is a huge fan of Neil Gaiman too, like me. But he knows Terry Pratchett. And he was like, you have to read Terry Pratchett. You love Neil Gaiman, read Terry Pratchett. So I haven't got into, like, any of his books. I have bought them on Audible, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I'll just try out a couple of his books. But I will say this is I was kind of worried about, man, you know, is this going to turn into, like, an American Gods show? You know, but the thing is, like, you can tell that Neil Gaiman is part of this process. After, like, so many seasons of American Gods, you could tell that Neil Gaiman wasn't part of any of it. Or he was, but it was, like, a silent thing.
It was, he was getting outvoted by,
yeah, like, studio executives and everything like that. And the thing is, like, I was kind of concerned about this. I was like, I don't know how I feel. I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. But I watched it, and I loved where they went with the story. I like the story. I enjoyed the whole humor between the devil, Bells? I always get their name wrong.
Zaphel, like, and Crawley?
Yeah, and Crawley. Mm. I love their chemistry together. And the two actors, Michael Sheen and David Tennant, are perfect. They have great chemistry together.
They're good friends in real life.
Yeah, and it makes you feel like they're dragging you into a story that you believe that these two people have known each other for their whole lives, mm-hmm. like this whole eternity. And I am super happy that they went with, a season two, because, I remember, what was it, like the third day it came out, I saw on Amazon Prime, it said this is the number one comedy on Amazon around the world. And I was like, wow, really? I was like, that's crazy. I didn't think people really knew this so much. And then I realized how many people like Good Omens. There's a ton of them. Like, I'm part of a Sandman group on Facebook. And constantly when the season ended, I mean, like when the whole season dropped, everyone binge watched it and they're like, oh man, this is horrible. And I was like, horrible? Like the show's horrible? And they're like, no, I can't wait any longer. Bring out season three. They gotta do a season three. And Neil Gaiman even spoke out and said, if Amazon decide not to do a season three, Neil Gaiman said he would write it in a book. And I said, okay, that's very rewarding to know that we're gonna get an ending to like the Crawley and thing. Cause like the ending of this season is kind of a little cliffhanger in a way. Not 100%. Things weren't like resolved. It was more of like, there's something that has to be resolved in a way of like a relationship or like a feeling.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be resolved, and I have thoughts on that personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I Neil Gaiman has a tendency of making like characters and whatnot like allegories. The one thing I'll give Neil Gaiman is that he won't. It's not like The Boys level of allegory where it's just like, look at this guy, you know who this guy is, yeah, he's this. Couldn't see that coming like 50 miles away. But like Neil Gaiman has a very good way of like introducing something, and then you sit there and you think for a bit and you're like, that's what this is kind of representing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, yeah, there's the subtle, like there's the obvious thing that he kind of introduced, the idea of like certain relationships. But it's like, mm-hmm. that's not the conversation he's having in this story. Like, that is part of it, but it's not the conversation. Thank you, Molly. Mm-hmm. But like, that's why I appreciate about him. It's not so like in your face. They see this, know this, and that's what the story's about. It's like, you gotta have to think about it just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Which I enjoy. And he does a good job of like leaving it kind of open-ended enough that you're kind of like, how is this going to resolve? Like, how does this end? And then like, you realize like, yeah, there was obvious clues throughout the whole show.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And the thing is like, I think John Hamm did such a great job as Gabriel. There's so many times that he made me laugh, like especially the part where like he walks in and he's like, I rearranged your books alphabetically. And he's like, alphabetically, huh? You
know, by he's like, author? He's by like, no, author? By the first like, letter in the book.
Which is a nightmare if you know how the Dewey Decimal System works. And like, that would just be a nightmare. Like trying to find a book and you had to realize like the first letter of the word. The first like letter in a sentence, you know.
It's fine if you know the book, but if you don't know the book, you're lost. Yeah. It's like Catch 22. What's the first letter of Catch 22? I don't know. Well, it looks like I'm never finding that book.
Oh yeah, and the thing is I like when Neil Gaiman takes a story that a lot of people know the story, but then they don't know all the context of the story and like how crazy, like nothing against people's religion, nothing against about that. But like some of the stories that he talks about, this is, you know, stories that were real. Like there's a whole like part where like Crawley is the demon that is assigned Job like his whole job, like to kill all of his sheep, kill his children, do all this stuff. And it's interesting to see, like, when John Hamm's like, yeah, God will give her
seven, like, children, because he likes sevens, and it's just like, but he's going to give him back his original children, right? Yeah. No. Why? Like, why would he want, like, you idiots? Like, and that's part of the like story that I feel like is kind of told in the perception and the perspective of the two.
Yeah.
And so we can go into that in more detail later. But I think it's a overarching theme of the episode, like of the series. Is like the concept of like heaven's and hell's perspective on things.
Yeah.
And that's what honestly I like about the show. Like it's a very solid show. Just from that alone, seeing and understanding the perspectives. Mm-hmm. And half of the story is just trying to understand their perspectives. I also do like how the demons are all like regimented, but they're all like bad regiments. Yes. So like when Crawley at the end, when he like tells him, is like paragraph 1.12 of section 338, all mortals will be like given ample time to leave the area so that there is no casualties. And they look at him, he's like, you have 10 minutes. And he's like, I completely made that up. They're just too bad to look into it. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, that's hilarious to me, because like he knows demons, like he is a demon, he understands it. He's too lazy to look into that. And so I like what's
really funny is you sent me a TikTok today, and it was like, did you crash it? You know, stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
and
with the Bentley.
It was the whole scene with the Bentley and like him turning it yellow, and he's like, is that a trip? Is that a sweet? Or what was it like? Is that a sweet for a trip sweet?
Is that a trip sweet?
And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, you turned my car yellow.
Turn it back.
I will say, it was really weird to a point where, like, when he turned that corner, like, after that scene, and then you just see, like, this Loch Ness monster type tentacle thing in the water. I was like, wait.
You know what that is, right?
No, I'm
remember in the first season where the kid believes that the Loch Ness monster and all those creatures are real? That doesn't stop it from being real. The kid still believes it. The kid still has those powers. So, like, he believes that there are krakens in the water, which is what that was. That was a great callback to that. Like, that's the thing I like about the show is that the callbacks are pretty spot on. Like, even the whole changing of Beelzebub's face and everything. It's just like, I'm not waiting for you. It's like, I got a new face, okay? Like, I've had that forever. I'm like, That's all they have to do with the one guy from the Marvel movies is just say you got a new face.
Oh, yeah. No, it's interesting to see how these characters are still going on. And I like the storyline that they did where, you know, they were trying to, like, Crawley makes the lightning come down and like knock out the electricity, and then like
accidentally,
and you know, he's trying to make those two fall in love. And the funny, I love the part when the police officer shows up.
Oh yeah, the heaven police officer.
She's such a dimbat. I am a human police officer.
I love that character. I just love how like she's not a dimbat. How I view her is like she's supposed to be. She is 100%. Because the meta narrative of the show, right? And I could be 100% wrong. This is just 100% what my takeaway was. Is the main narrative of this show, you want to look at it and be like, oh, it's about like, you know, love and relationship, that love has no boundaries type deal thing, like heaven or hell will not separate love, because that's what showed with Michael Beelzebub, with the two store owners, and then the idea with Crawley and Aziraphale.
Yeah,
but that's what you look at there. What the actual meta narrative story is more of this idea about like abusive religion, And when you look at it from that lens and perspective, you start seeing a lot more things. Like, the reason why Michael and Beelzebub couldn't be together is not because they couldn't or didn't want to be. It's because Michael wasn't allowed to. And Hell wouldn't let her. Or Beelzebub. And then it's like, you know, you have the two, you have the manner of the two store owners, and the one being part of a relationship that is very abusive to her. And basically saying, like, hey, you can't exist without me. I am going to control your every action. I'm going to force you to do everything. You have to feel bad if you don't do it to my perspective. And it's not until she lets that go that she's able to move on.
Yeah.
In the ending between Crawley and Aziraphale, Aziraphale has to choose between Crawley or an abusive religion, like the church, essentially. And it's the idea of, like, an abusive relationship, abusive friendship, where it's like, hey, you choose me that you know you care about, you have your freedom, or you go back to these people who have, for the last hundreds of years, treated you like trash. And then he has the mindset, well, I can change it from the inside. All you have to do is say yes to me. And it's like, you misunderstand. You're asking me to change for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just asking that you just don't take this spot in their organization.
Yeah.
And it's like that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's the same meta narrative throughout the whole show. This object of, like, an abusive religion, like, over controlling, and this idea that through all these seasons, you keep seeing these scenes where Crawley is doing good, or Aziraphale is doing bad in the eyes of the angels for the betterment of humans.
Yes.
And it's kind of like chalks it up to this final episode to be like, Aziraphale, you know how this goes. You know what they are. And he still chooses it. And the reason why I bring this all up whenever it comes to the constable girl is she's the definition of the new person.
Yeah.
She's legitimately just brand new, fresh. She doesn't know all the negatives that they all do. She's very gullible. And the reason why she's gullible is because she believes there's good in a lot of people. And she's just doing as she is told. And she doesn't know about tricks. She doesn't know about all this bad stuff. She's very pure-hearted. And I think it's also why you see her at the end looking through the bookshop. Because, like, we learn early on throughout, like, the course of the season that angels are able, I guess, kind of to, like, sense love in some way between humans. And so at the end, whenever Aziraphale and Crawley are, like, doing their whole scene, they're talking, and they end up kissing, the constable girl, if you pause it, you will see her in the back of the picture outside the window looking in, watching them. And I think that's going to have something in the next season. And I think the whole next season is legitimately going to be about, you know, Crawley being like, I feel betrayed by him, that he would go back to them after they've treated him so poorly for so many years. And he would say no to me. I thought we had something. And I'm like, that's the narrative. Like, that's the story that they're telling. Like, it's not just the story of love. It's the story of, like, oppressive things trying to force what is and isn't love. Because screw the angels that we see in this season. Like, I did not like them at all.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I didn't like either of them, actually. I didn't like the demons, or I didn't like...
Oh, yeah, Shanks or whatever? Yeah,
because, like, that whole... I love this storyline. This is one of my favorite parts of the season, was when Crawley and them go to shoot the gun, and the demons show up, and they have, like, that... they hole punch a miracle blocker.
Yeah.
And I thought that was one of the most cool... I like Neil Gaiman when he has interesting concepts like that. He's like, oh, we have a miracle blocker. I was like, dude, that is... Whoever thought that was, like... Oh,
just it's the just concept cool of it, you know?
I like it. It's cool. And he's done that with, like, multiple... you know, like, in American Gods, he did the concept of actually where you know, all these gods are a part of all these different landmarks around America, and they all meet at the center, and the center is a place where is a holy ground where there's no fighting and both sides can talk. And it's the House on the Rock. If you've ever heard about the House on the Rock, it's this weird place in Wisconsin where this guy started building like some type of house, and he didn't have the rights for the house or the land, but he just built it anyways. And then he just started putting weird stuff in his house. And then people were like, wow, look at that guy. He built that house on like this huge rock. We should go look at it. So he's like, you know what? What if I just kept building on this rock? And then I charged people a mission. And that's why now it's considered like one of those things like Falling Waters, Frank Lloyd Wright in Pennsylvania. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like one of those attractions where you're like, ah, that's cool, you know, or like Route 66 is part of like these dying attractions that are pretty funny, and they like cope them with gods. And I'm like, how does Neil Gaiman just like come up with this stuff? And I actually watched an interview with him, he had an interview at the end of his audiobook for American Gods, where he talked about how he traveled in the States for, I think it was like a year. He just traveled everywhere to like these weird attractions and stuff. And he's like, you know, I just wanted to write this thing about like the American roadways and like the beauty of just like driving and all this other stuff. And the story just came together. And when I'm like, I don't know how he comes up the concept with certain things, but I like that the miracle puncher thing was like hilarious, because it was like this thing where like demons can have like this little hole puncher thing that stops a miracle from happening. I thought it was just so cool. I don't know. I'm sorry, guys. It's just a stupid little thing, but I think it's cool. It's a cool concept. But that's one of the best storylines that I remember, is because they're two Englishmen, and the girls like digging up bodies to like sell those bodies to like the thing. And he ends up like, they end up opening up the barrel and it's like all mush and like pus and stuff. And he's like, wait, I'm not going to give you anything. This is soup. And then Crowley's like, look at you. I know what you did. I love the interactions that they have. And I think if this show can still have those two and have that chemistry going, you could come up with some really cool concepts, and it works because those two actors are great at the chemistry. And I was totally shocked when, you know, like I didn't get this because it didn't click for me until it happened. Usually I can pick up on stuff. Sometimes I'm like, oh, okay. But the whole Gabriel reveal with him like having a relationship with
Beelzebub,
which is actually, you know, one of Neil Gaiman's favorite type of demon to write about.
Well, he's one of the most prominent and talked about demon.
Yeah, I didn't know that they were in love or like they even knew each
other.
I didn't get it. And didn't hit me until then. I was like, oh, wait a minute. They've been showing this the whole time.
Oh yeah, 100%. That's one of the two things that I was like, oh, that was referenced through the whole point. Because there's the scene wherever Shanks goes in there and asks about, like, can I get a bunch of men to infiltrate, blah, blah, blah. And Beelzebub's like, yes, you can have as many men as you want. And whenever she says, like, you can have as many men as you want, she's like, I don't care. All I want you to do is find Michael. And then she walks off. And then she has the look on her face where she starts, like, kind of tearing up like she's sad. And whenever I saw that, I'm like, she misses Michael, like she wants him. And then, like, you know, the whole like fly thing throughout the whole season, Michael was sitting there trying to like swat a fly.
He's like,
hey, these are great fly swatters. I mean, it never works, but like they're great. And it's like, that's supposed to show the reference there as well. And it's like, that's the fly wears better.
Yeah, like I love when a show does that to me where I don't pick up on that stuff. And it was well done. Like I could see how people could pick up on it, but I did not pick up on it. And when it got revealed, I was like, oh my gosh, you feel like all that rush where you're like, it's been there the whole time and I've been stupid not to know it. It was really well done. I like the finale a lot, and it leaves a lot of like open questions about like where things are going to go from here and how interesting I think season 3 is going to be, because I know the show is going to get renewed.
Oh yeah.
So many people love this show, I didn't realize how many people love this show until I saw that it was like the number one comedy for like 2 weeks straight. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. But the other thing is the comedy in the show is so spot on, though. It's not like a point where like they're trying to force the comedy onto you. I don't feel like there's like a forcefulness of it. Like some shows, you know that it's a comedy, but then there's also serious, you know, there's serious things to talk about. This is this show where they have serious topics. They're trying to solve something, but there's also like those snippets of comedy that I love that are subtle. They're not like, hey, well, you know.
You know what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's British humor. Like,
it is.
This show is British. Because, okay, you know it's British humor whenever, like, there's three zombies walk into the portal, and then they're all just sitting there kind of dumbfounded, like, they just keep walking in the portal, and it's like, yeah, well, they're not going to keep walking into it forever. They sooner or later catch on, and then they run. Or, like, whenever they throw the plaque into the building, and it's just like, give us the angle, and it's like, it's supposed to be Angel. Spelling is not their strong suit.
I loved the other concept that I loved was when he took his halo off and he did the thing with his halo and they looked at him and they said, what happened? He's like, no one's ever used that tactic since the World War I, I think, or World War II.
Well, he says you're not supposed to do that since it's like not allowed to do a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I may have just started a war between heaven and hell.
Did they ever explain? Because I don't really remember they explained what really the halo did, like when he died.
I think it was just like a wipe type deal thing. Like it was a super wipe of all the demons. Because once it happened, that's whenever everything kind of started slightly de-escalating. Because like then the generals of hell came, and then the angels from heaven came, and then it was kind of like at that point wrapping up. Which I did find funny with it.
That and like I laughed really bad out loud when like the zombies were trying to get up the stairs, and they were just using like the fire extinguishers. And it's like, I'm gonna throw. How about some books? And he's like,
rather you not. It's like, what about encyclopedias? They're all online anyways. He says, if you must.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting, and I thought the interesting take too was the Buddy Holly song. I thought that was pretty interesting. It's weird because like that song, you forget about it for so long, and then someone plays it, and you're like, "Oh, I know that song," you know. And every day things are getting closer. That was like a huge TikTok meme, I think, probably a year or two ago. And I forgot all about that song, and then it came up, and then like when this happened, I was like, that song's gonna get stuck in my head again. And it did. It got stuck in my head for the last week now. And then I rewatched the season, and I was like, I gotta listen to it. So it's on my playlist now, of course. But I just like this type of environment, this world that they've created of this show. I really enjoy it. And it's something that I'm looking forward to them like continuing. Like, It's hard to find a show where you don't see a repeat of the same thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, we were talking about Secret Invasion, and I've been talking about Marvel movies lately about how I feel sometimes like it's like a rinse and repeat some things. And I feel like that with some DC movies and DC shows where I'll watch something and it doesn't move the plot forward at all. And it just puts a lot of filler in, and then it like gives you a good ending. So with Good Omens, though, is like after I was watching an episode, I wanted to watch another episode because I didn't know what was going to happen. Like I didn't have any clue. I didn't know what was going to happen. It's more of like I'm excited for a show that has great writing, great acting, and I just want to keep watching it. Like I haven't had that in a while. Like we've watched shows that are good like in the last couple of months, but like this show is great. Like I can't like say how much I really love the show, but yeah, I'm ranting, sorry guys. It's a really good show. If you haven't got around to watching it, you should totally watch Good Omens. It's a 10 out of 10 for me, you know. And the thing is I'm gonna be real with you, us doing this show really helped me out because we did watch The Boys, and the boys, you know, kind of had like a lot of things going wrong with it, and it just didn't, I don't know. I think that Neil Gaiman is better at building a world than whoever wrote the show for the boys. And so when watching this, I felt like, I was like, man, this is, I wish every TV show had someone that was good at writing like this. And now it might be, you know, a little bit longer now that we're going to get season 3 because of the
it's going to be at least 2 to 3 years possibly.
Yeah. Cause they even stated that, like, you know, Stranger Things is now backed up, which, whatever.
Everything's going to get backed up from this point on. If anything starts getting made now, expect it to be absolute trash and garbage.
Yeah.
That's just how it's going to be. And so I'm not holding up. Austin, there will probably come a point in the next year, if the strike continues, that we have to start digging into older series because nothing new that comes out is even worth talking about.
Which is going to be great because that means we don't have to worry about something new coming out and being like, hey, we got to
we could do the JoJo seasons. We can now be like, hey, we got nothing else to do. Let's do it. And then it's like, oh, we got everything caught up. Cool. Let's start One Piece.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
I'll mess with you. Do that. But no, I agree. I think the show is fantastic. I think it's amazing. I think what they're trying to show and talk about is fantastic. I also know that after the first season, they got a lot of slack for depicting heaven the way they did. Yeah. And people, like, all the, like, extreme Christians were like, how dare they do it? I'm like, just wait till they watch this season. Because they're going to freak out whenever Michael is seen with Beelzebub. They're in love. And then it's like, you see an angel and a demon. They're kissing. Homosexuality, it's everywhere. And it's like, yeah, who cares? Like, this is a narrative on the concept of religion. Like,
we're
what you think they're going to
about-
do.
Fictional characters.
But that's what I'm saying, like, who cares? Like,
it doesn't matter.
You, if you're watching Bad Omen because you expect some form of, like, perfect biblical description of the two, you're not gonna get, you're gaining a lot more of, like, theological thought process. Like, I really like it anytime they do a flashback between Crawley and Aziraphale in the past. Like, you see, like, the whole, like, oh, maybe I did good and you did bad. Wouldn't that be hilarious during the Garden of Eden scene?
Yeah.
And then with, like, Job, you find out, like, neither of them liked the idea of killing Job's people or his goats or anything. Like, Crawley's like, I killed all of his goats. And it's like, he sees the pigeons and they're all cooing awkwardly. And then he turns them all back into goats. He's like, you didn't kill any of the goats. He's like, oh, you caught me. And I'm not going to kill the people either. We're going to turn them into salamanders. And then we're going to lie to the angels about them being kids and whatnot. And it's like, because that, like, that,
part...
that's an issue with the Bible that I always, like, have. And, like, even whenever I watch, like, there's this guy on TikTok. I think I send it to you all the time. He does, like, Jimothy. And he'll, like, ask questions. It was just like, why would God kill all of Job's people just to prove a point? And he's just like, God works in mysterious ways. And he's like, that's dumb. God sounds evil. Like,
God sounds
you're
evil.
Right. God absolutely does God's sound got, evil whenever you God's read things in the context.
Debts. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's gamble this guy's life. You know, and the thing is like, some of the interactions in that whole story was great, where, like, the whole contract thing, where he's like, you have a contract? And he's like, yeah, I got a contract, you know? And, like, he goes up and he's like, he does. And it's like, what? Why would they do that? You know, and they completely explain what you just explained. They're like, you know, like, we're going to give him back everything just in a different way.
It's just, we're going to give him everything but double. It's like, that doesn't, like, you understand these are his kids. He has raised them. And it's not the same as, like, goats and everything. We don't get as physically attached. And you know what's also funny, right? You know the other callback in that scene? Whenever Crawley kills all the goats, Aziraphale is like, I can't believe that happened. And then he gets revealed that he saved all the goats. You get that, right?
Yeah.
You get the callback to the arc, whenever he's like, you can't kill kids. Like, they're kids. And it's like, that's the thing. Like, there's so much messed up stuff that if you only look at it through the concept of, like, owning property, like, your kids are property, your stuff. It's like, oh, no, that matters. Like, it's all fine. I get it all back. But then when you look at it from the headlines, like, lens of actual, like, loving, caring human, you're like, that's messed up.
Yeah, it is.
And that's what, like, Crawley is. He's supposed to be the lens of, like, a logical thinker towards, like, Aziraphale, who's doing what he is told because he is told it is good. Because, yeah, like, at the end, whenever they're yelling, Aziraphale's like, but we're the good guys. You are the bad guys. Like, that probably hurt Crawley more than anything anyone else has ever said to him. Because he's like, you're not the good guys. You've seen it for the last hundreds of years. You just refuse to look at it. And you know it's not true. You're lying to yourself. Because you want it to be true. We just spent the last 10 episodes, 20 episodes, if you're counting the first season, doing the opposite of what Heaven wants. Because Heaven's kind of, like, just as bad as hell.
Yeah, and I think, like, in season 3, they're going to do a flashback with Abraham and his son.
I can believe,
like,
it.
I could see that, because that's also another Bible story that I always had problems with. I was like, wait, you're going to ask him to kill his own son? Like, just to show that he shows his loyalty to you?
Oh, they already did the callback. They already did that in the first season.
They did, but they didn't kind of do, like, a whole thing on it. I don't remember.
I think actually what we're going to get in the next season is the second coming, because that's, like, what he's told at the end.
Well, yeah,
he's,
we,
like,
haven't taught.
We're going to have the second coming. And I think the whole concept is going to be this idea that it's, like, when God became flesh and blood, he became flesh and blood. So he's going to be more down to earth than what the angels are going to like, and then he's not going to want to do what Heaven wants, because he's like, Heaven's doing the wrong thing, and you don't notice unless you spend time with the earth. Like, I think it's going to be something like that. I don't, quote me on that, I'm not Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman thinks a lot better than I do. But
now there was a part of the Job storyline where I actually spit out my water. I was drinking and I was watching it. It was the part where he pulls the rib out, like, tries to fake this rib.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, like, this huge elephant rib, it looks like. I just, like, was like, I didn't expect it. It was just a surprise.
He's like,
thing.
That doesn't look like that doesn't look like a rib. And it's just like, no. This is exactly what happened. I was there.
John Hamm is so great. So, yeah. I think it's interesting. And what it really reminds me, after I seen this and after talking to you and read the book, it reminds me of The Sandman, actually, a lot, where Neil Gaiman takes characters, but he chooses a different story every time he tells, like, a book. And, like, this is exactly what it is. First season was the apocalypse. Second season was about the two angels and Gabriel. And we're going to see, like, a third season that's going to be, you know, about him being, like, the new, what was it, the archangel or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, not liking the job. Because you can clearly tell, like, how they left off, that he's not going to like that job because he's been on Earth for too long.
I think it's going to be a thing where he's going to drink the Kool-Aid in the game. He's going to be like, this is great. This is perfect. It's just like I imagined. But he ultimately wants to make a difference.
Yeah.
But as seen with the Archangel Michael chose not to make a difference. He still got kicked out. Mm-hmm. He chose to say no to something. He got kicked out. It's going to probably be the same thing with Aziraphale.
Yep.
And it's going to be a situation where Crawley's going to go to him asking him to stop or do something, and he has to make a decision to stay with Crawley or to act against Heaven. And I do like the whole concept of, like, them, like, we can't kick out Michael and send him to hell. Like, one angel is, it's a issue, or one thing, it's an exception. Two, it may become systemic issue. And, like, that's the whole concept. It's like, it's a systemic issue. The concept is flawed.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of narrative stuff that I just appreciate the story writing in it. And I can't wait for the next season. I think it's going to be baller, as they say.
Whoa.
Yep. All right, Austin. Do you have anything you want to say to wrap it up for this season of
No.
Good Omens?
No, I think we're doing, it's doing really good, you know, and the thing is, it's like, I didn't want to bring this up for a while, and I'm sorry if I'm going to bring everyone down here, but this show really helped me through a difficult time in my life right now. I lost, you know, my wife and me were trying to have a child, and we lost our child after 8 months And I've kind of been like, I've been wanting to tell everyone here on the podcast about it. And like, you know, I've been dealing with a lot, and I've learned that this show, this season came out around that time, and it has affected me to a point where sometimes I just need a good media to help me think about something different as I grieve. And Good Omens season 2 did that for me. They made it really well, and I really appreciate everyone that, you know, has been thinking about us and stuff like that. And you know, it's getting better with time, but I'm just, you know, I'm so happy that I'm doing this podcast. I'm happy that, like, you know, I'm part of this, that I love doing this podcast. And I'm so happy that, you know, this show, just a show, could just make my day sometimes. And that's sometimes all you need. Like, you just need those people that bring great entertainment to you to, like, make you happy a little bit. So, you know, thanks. But, yeah. So, not to bring everyone down.
No, it's, yeah, it's fine, man. So, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
It's... I feel that, Austin. I feel that. And I apologize now because we're watching Steven Universe.
For the next
5 weeks.
So I'm going to be real with you. I finally finished a game that I've been wanting to play, and then I finished it, and I was like, I shouldn't have done that. And it was Little Misfortune, actually. I finished Little Misfortune. Have you finished it yet?
No, I can't call myself to do it. I know what's going to happen, and I just get more and more depressed.
Before you go through it, though, I'll tell you this. Make sure that you glitter everything.
I have been. I glitter things that aren't even allowed to be glittered. Well,
what's a good ending? But, like, that Little Misfortune is rough. I got myself to a point where I was like, I want to finish this game. I did. And Friday I was bawling in tears because it just brought things to me that, like, I was been dealing with in my life. And, like, it actually, the ending, the super happy, the happy ending, they say, actually gave me a lot of hope. So I will say that you should finish it. It's a great thing, but
it's rough. I'm just, Austin, I'll be honest. I was playing it, like, before everything, right? And even then I'm sitting there bawling, and I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I don't want to play this game. I have 2 weeks vacation coming up in 2 weeks, right? I think I'm going to sit down and finish the game there whenever I know no one's at the house, so I can just bawl my eyes out and not care. Because as I was playing it, I just started, like, ugly crying at, like, certain points of, like, reading certain parts in the diary, and I'm like, I can't do this. The last thing I want is to be, like, breaking down when there's someone in the house. Because, Austin, me and you, we grew up in the same household. You don't show your emotions. You bottle it up inside and you hide it. But there's some things that just suck you out of you and you can't help it. Like, what can you do? Yep. And that's the thing. Like, I say about, like, Little Misfortune, but I also say, like, Steven Universe is that show to me. There are so many scenes in Steven Universe that the music just hits me on an emotional level. That just hits me. Like, I can't help it. I'm getting, like, curled up just thinking of a couple of the scenes. And I'm sorry, Austin, because it's... Unless you don't feel the emotions like I feel the emotions, you're... Oh, man. I don't know. Song hits me differently. Like, that's the truth of me.
Look, I'm going to be real with you, and me and you have talked about this before, is I'm an emo, an elder emo at heart, and there is music that I have listened to that has made me cry harder than most things that I've ever dealt with in my life. And the thing is like, there's a lot of things that I am vulnerable. Like, I've learned to be, I lived in a house where, like, you know, people showed emotions, but it was like this thing where you were like, you're a man, you're supposed to keep your emotions in a little bit.
Austin, and let's be honest here. We grew up in a house where the father figure told us that we had to be a man and not show emotions. And the mother side of us told us that we should show our emotions. And then, thus, we've grown up with two things. One, never showing our emotions, and only showing our emotions to one person. Like, that's how it is. Like, that's our life. Or at least that's my life. Like, I can't...
No, I'm with you. Like, emo music to me has probably broken that tide a little bit, because I do like a good cry. Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
But that's the thing, Austin. That's how we alleviate it. That's not how we process.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the issue, right? We don't process. We were taught by our father to never process our emotions. to not talk about our emotions. And then it's like, we were told by our mom, like, well, talk to me about the issues. And so we only learned, well, at least maybe this is for me, I only talk about my emotions, my issues with my mom. And for that reason, it makes Steven Universe more of a hurt because of the story of Steven Universe, which you'll start learning. And this is also a funny part, and we can kind of like end on this type deal thing. I find it funny you were talking about bad shows where you feel like it doesn't move the plot along at all. Get ready for 48 episodes of no plot movement. Because here's the funny thing about Steven Universe, and I will say this. For the first 48 episodes of season one, which it's only 11 minutes each, so it says 48, it's more like 20. Those episodes is more like introductory, just to introduces you to the world of Steven Universe. And then episode 40 comes along, when you see a hand in the sky, that's when crap gets real, and from that point on, it's story. It's plot, it's explained, like, Steven Universe does a great job after that point of moving the plot, explaining the plot, and going from there. So, enjoy, Austin. I'm sorry for the first 48 episodes, you're going to feel like everything is self-contained, it has no, like, connectivity. And then from that, from 48 episodes and on, Austin, you're going to have references back to those 48 episodes that you're not going to realize are connected. That's just what I'm saying. So enjoy it. Have fun. I'm going to enjoy watching it because I love the show. And I'm going to bop in the story. This was a show,
you know, and this is a show that we've been wanting to do for a long time because you've been wanting to do the show for a long time because you're like, hey, you know, this is a show that changed my life. I really want to do it. And I actually refrain from watching it because there's so many times. I have watched one episode and it was because it was at Disney World. When you go to Disney World, when you stay at the hotels, they only show Disney, like, produced stuff.
Yeah,
and like that was one of the shows that was on in the when I first went there. I think it was like in 2000 and
wait, like Steven Universe?
Mm-hmm.
No, Steven Universe is Cartoon Network.
Yeah, they still have Cartoon Network though.
Oh, do they?
They do.
Oh,
okay. I forgot that they do have a partnership with Cartoon Network because they also show Cartoon Network. But that was the first time I ever saw Steven Universe. So, and I was like, wait, I think I watched the first episode. Because I don't.
Sorry,
I really don't remember. So
what was the episode about?
I don't remember.
They're okay,
like
that's fine.
Cabin or
we'll,
some type of house.
We'll see. We'll see. That there's a lot of in the first season of just connectivity. You'll just have to have fun. You'll just have to watch and you have to go.
Yes, we are watching Steven Universe season one. It's available on Hulu.
Yep, it's on Hulu, not on HBO. Or maybe it's still on HBO. I'm not sure. HBO took a lot of crap off, and we hate HBO now.
Yeah.
And what can you do? Anyways, Austin, thank you all so much for joining me on this episode of Bros and Shows. I appreciate you, Austin, for you stopping by, for you joining us, and having a good old time. So, Austin, thank you. And to everyone else who came by, stop by and say hi, watch, and listen. Thank you all so much for stopping by, and thank you all so much for tuning in.